My name's Mandy Meikle, and I've been working on energy issues for about 7 or 8 years now. I started campaigning against open cast coal mining in the central belt of Scotland. I got involved with the Green Party, worked on Green Party energy policy for a few years, got fed up sitting in front of a computer just typing words, learnt about peak oil through this because someone came to the Greens interested in it. And it's one of these things, the workshop I give is trying to explain to people the basics of what peak oil is, and then leading into, you know, how we've developed this demand for energy and why the alternatives are, you know, not all going to add up. They're all great in their own respect, but none of them are going to replace oil. So demand reduction is essential, as it is for tackling climate change.
Okay, and when you explain peak oil to people, how do you do that, and what kind of reaction do people give?
Well, the talks I've given, my first talk was a couple of years ago at a war and oil and conflict kind of meeting. The talks I give do tend to be preaching to the converted, but peak oil is quite a difficult thing to get your head round. You know, globalisation would not have happened if we hadn't had the cheap energy of oil. It's just a fact. So although I'm preaching to the converted, I think those that are already slightly green are much more likely to seriously change their ways, seriously reduce their energy demands. I haven't spoken to hostile audiences, although I did wonder what the climate camp was going to be like, because I have heard people that are worried about climate change sometimes think, well, peak oil, you know, bring it on. And it's an obvious thing to say, but peak oil is not about oil running out. It's about supplies failing to meet demand. And you have to understand that the oil that we've used over the last 150 years to build our Western society is known as conventional oil. It's relatively easy to extract. It's in large reservoirs. And what is now happening, because these conventional resources are becoming depleted, people are now turning to non-conventional oil. They're talking about using coal more. And all these things are much more energy intensive and or dirty. Examples of non-conventional oil is heavy oils. You'll now hear talk of Venezuela with its heavy oil deposits. They need a lot more processing to get the same, you know, petroleum products that you get out of the normal crude. You've got bitumens, you've got tar sands. Again, Alaska and Canada are now starting to get mined, because tar sands and shale oils have to be mined rather than just pumped out of some underground reservoir. And again, all these things, a lot of my talk is trying to explain that energy doesn't exist in a usable form naturally. You have to convert it into something we can use, which is often electricity. But there's also transport, heating. Our agriculture is so dependent on conventional oil for not just the equipment on the farm, the food miles, the packaging, the fertilisers, the pesticides, you know. And it's trying to make people realise just how addicted to oil we are, and the answers to dealing with that addiction also address climate change as well. I mean, to me, the two things are linked, but I've got really frustrated over the years hearing, again, peak oilers quite often dismiss climate change. They think, you know, if climate change is a 3 out of 10 problem, peak oil is up at 11 or 12. And also sometimes, you know, that's the peak oilers. Sometimes the climate change people tend to think, like I said, you know, peak oil, well, bring it on. You know, if we run out of oil, that's great. Well, it's not, because we've got shitloads of coal, and that can also be processed into, you know, petroleum products. And it is happening now. There was a thing in the news just last week about Montana upping their, you know, their coal mining so that they can use this coal to make oil products. So the two are, they're very, very linked.
It's a question of supply and demand. Do you go into the social impacts of that?
To an extent, it would depend how the discussion went. The social impacts, I mean, they are going to be huge, because our whole, in the West, now one of the things about peak oil, it's a problem that's going to hit the rich poor, or the poor rich, however you want to call it. If you're living in India and you've had no access to cheap energy for however many decades, you're running about on your donkey and you're growing your own food, peak oil is not going to have an impact on you. You know, your life isn't going to significantly change. However, it's people in the rich world. You know, we've all got our televisions and our mobile phones, but we're not rich. We're not the elite. You know, we're not the military. I mean, there are people who are always going to be able to access what's left of the oil.
I suppose, sort of, again, from a climate campaigner point of view, the price of energy going up has to be a positive thing.
Well, you have got to worry about you know, the sort of warm homes, and there's a lot of things trying to make give people, you know, make sure people aren't living in, you know, drafty houses, you know, etc. As people's bills go up, there's always going to be those who cannot pay those bills. You get the classic now of the little old woman who dies because she's sitting in front of her bar fire. She's not heating her whole house. Her house is damp and mouldy. The problem is we have had far too much cheap energy and cheap food. I mean, there's also a knock-on. There's a social implication for food production. The thing about peak oil is no one can actually say when it's going to happen because it's a peak in production. M. King Hubbert, who did work in the 50s, he tried to explain this to the oil industry. He was absolutely ridiculed. He seemed to think that, he predicted that the peak of oil production in the United States would be round about 1970, 1971. Now, looking back, it turns out he was bang on. But at the time, in 1970, people were saying, remember that old guy Hubbert? Well, what a load of nonsense. We're now extracting more oil than we ever have before. And that's the whole point of a peak. You are at the peak of production, at which point you're producing more than you're going to in the future. You then come down the downside, and Hubbert's calculations can be applied to oil fields, to countries, to regions, or globally. In 1977, Hubbert predicted that the global peak in oil would be in 1996. Now, in 1977, he didn't know there was going to be a big economic recession through the 80s and the 90s. And another reason that peak oil and climate change are so linked is because the less oil we use now, the longer we delay this peak in production, and we give ourselves longer to realise what are we going to do without oil, because it's a unique resource. There's nothing else as energy dense. It's a liquid, so it's easy to transport. It's also, it's not just a fuel, it's a raw material. All the trappings of modern plastics, your computer there, you know, your iPods, your mobile phones, even people who are relatively, you know, live low energy lives, unless they're growing their own food and really doing the good life thing, they're all dependent on oil to a certain extent. So what I try to do with these talks is get people who are already quite green to realise it's important not just for tackling climate change, but it's like future-proofing yourself. The less you rely on oil now, the better you will be. But no one can predict a date because it depends how fast we use the oil that we know about. It depends what new discoveries are made. But as I mentioned, if we start relying on coal and non-conventional oils more, that has got a carbon dioxide impact as well as a, you know, an environmental impact.
How do you try and bring people round to the kind of changes that they can make?
It's really difficult, and I think people talking about climate change have the same trouble, because I just went to an excellent workshop on climate science, and when you realise, I mean, climate is incredibly complex, the global economy is incredibly complex. Demand reduction is the absolute key. We absolutely have to reduce how far we travel, where we buy our food from. And what I tend to do, I end my talk by, and the part of the workshop which I find fascinating when you get a group of different people together, is finding out, well, what do you know about that's going on? Just yesterday I learned about a thing called the Nottingham Declaration, which is whereby a number of local authorities around Britain are choosing to reduce their own energy demands. There's also local groups doing this. There's a lot of, I've heard things on Radio 4 as well, there's quite a lot of small communities getting involved in, you know, whether it's community supported agriculture where you make direct links with local farmers, or just getting organic vegetables. You know, maybe someone says, right, I'll buy in bulk and I'll bag it up and I'll sell it on, you know, just doing things. But it's reducing the air miles of your food, reducing how much you travel. I mean, anyone that's commuting, and this includes me because I live in Lanarkshire and work in Edinburgh, anyone that commutes significant amounts every day has got to think, well, how high will the price of oil have to get before I can't afford to, you know, pay the public transport bills, or you know, put petrol in my car, etc. So I always end on these positive notes, and every talk I've given you find other examples of things going on in communities that are either trying to cut their carbon emissions or reduce their energy demands, whether it's for climate change, whether it's because they're aware of peak oil. It's all the same solutions, and I think it's really important to stress that to people and get people thinking about what they can do. Because another really important thing, as a green, I feel really strange saying, you know, biofuel's not the answer, solar's not the answer. No one thing is the answer. And even when you add all the alternatives together, they don't have the energy output that oil does. Oil's this unique thing that we should probably never have found, because if we'd never found it, we would have developed in a much more benign way, so, you know, socially and economically. But we did find it. It's a one-off. It's not going to regenerate itself. And we have to think about how we use what's left. And the last thing we should be doing is burning it, because then you've got the carbon dioxide emissions into the, you know, into the atmosphere. We're now supposedly tackling climate change, and yet, you know, demand just goes up and up and up. And when you look back to the 50s, people were getting quite into their consumables then. But the amount we used in a year in 1950, we now today use in 2 weeks.